Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 12th chapter, Creation of the Kumaras and Udders, texts 36, 37, and 38. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura said, O great sage, whose only wealth is penance, kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge, which emanated from his mouth. Text 37. Maitreya Uvacha Rigyaju Samatharvakyan Vedan Purvadibir Mukhai Shastrami Jam Stutistomam Prayaschitam Vyadat Kramat. Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Riyajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns, which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and transcendental activities were all established, one after another. Text 38. Ayurvedang danurvedang gandharvam vedamatmanaha stapityam chastrijadvedang kramat purvadibir mukai. He also created the medical science, military art, musical art, and architectural science, all from the Vedas. They all emanated one after another, beginning from the front face, purport. The Vedas contain perfect knowledge, which includes all kinds of knowledge necessary for the human society, not only on this particular planet, but on other planets as well. It is understood that military art is also necessary knowledge for the upkeep of social order, as is the art of music. All these groups of knowledge are called the Upapurana, or supplements of the Vedas. Spiritual knowledge is the main topic of the Vedas, but to help the human being's spiritual pursuit of knowledge, the other information as above mentioned forms necessary branches of the Vedic knowledge. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gidamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam karoti vacha lampam gumlangayate girim yat kripadamaham vande sri guru dinataranam paramananda madhavam sri chaitanyeshwaram vanchakalpatrubhyascha kripa sindhubhyaivacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. We're very grateful to be back here at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Vallabh, Jagannath Baladev Subhadevi, Sri Sri Gauri Thai, Srila Prabhupada, all the assembled devotees in Mahaprabhu Mandir, Melbourne. In this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the creation of the Kumaras and others is explained. Vidura is questioning the great sage Maitreya, and he's addressing him as a great sage whose only wealth is penance. The only wealth that sages have is their penance. They are not interested in any other type of display of opulence because they have focused on the essence, on the essential truths. Thus, they are foregoing all other types of activities and they're purely focusing on the substance or sar. Just like the essence of milk is the cream from which we make ghee. It is the essence. In the same way, it is explained in these verses that there are so many Vedic literatures, Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva. First it was one Veda, and it was spoken by the Lord to Brahma. Tene Brahma Hridaya Dikavaye Muyanti Yatsuraya Tejo Varim Ridang Yata Vinimayo Yatra Trisargo Visha. So, the Veda is emanating from the Lord Himself, and it has been manifested to Lord Brahma in His heart after he performed penance. So if you want to get something good, you have to endeavor. You have to put in a little effort. It doesn't just come automatically. So Brahma, he was sitting on the lotus and he meditated for 100 years. And he was performing this penance, upon which the Lord appeared in front of him and he shook his hand. It's pretty nice, you know. Krishna comes, shakes your hand, says, thank you. And he said that, don't be depressed and don't be anxious. Whatever you're praying for, it has already been granted so many times. Have we ever been depressed or anxious? Has this ever happened to us? Or is it just me? So, Brahma was a little despondent because the universe was empty. The universe was dark. It was not an easy situation. He didn't know what would be the proper course of action. So, he prayed to the Lord intensely. This is the proper course of action. When we do not know what is to be done, what is not to be done, we should take shelter of the Lord. Most of the time, we rely upon our own intelligence. We've got plan B, plan C, plan D, right? We always think that with our own intelligence, there is some contingency plan. Somehow we can solve this situation. But the material world is a very difficult place. And even though we may go on making all elaborate arrangements, they will be proven futile simply by the turning of the tide. Simply by time, everything crumbles. Therefore, a devotee is not relying on his or her own intelligence, but is taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord by praying intensely and asking for guidance. And this is exactly what Lord Brahma did. Brahma is our Sampradaya Acharya. We're in the Brahma Madhav Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. So we should follow Lord Brahma's example, who took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna appeared in front of him and he consoled him, and he manifested the Vedas in his heart in just 4 verses, Chatushloki. Because Brahma, his entire body consists of pure intelligence. He was intelligent enough to get it in 4 verses. How many verses have we heard so far? How many verses did you read so far? Quite a few, right? Did we get it? Not really. Maybe we got it, but we forgot it. I probably learned more verses before I joined than I forgot now in the past so many years. So, because we are conditioned souls, we have imperfect senses, we make mistakes, we have flaws. Therefore, we need to hear again and again and again and again. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We need to hear the Bhagavatam every day because we tend to forget. Now Brahma, he also forgets sometimes certain things, so he's being reminded by different personalities. But he is so intelligent that simply in 4 verses, he understood the essence. And through Brahma, the Lord manifests not only the cosmic creation and all the life forms, but he also manifests the Vedic wisdom. Now people who are not very intelligent, they think, oh, the Vedas come from Brahma. He made it all. He's the engineer. It's like when you see any type of toy, you say, okay, this was built by some engineer. But you do not understand that the engineer simply works according to the plan, the blueprint that has been handed to him by the designer. So you have to ask, who is the person who designed it? Who is the person who conceived of it? Who is the person who gave the impetus and gave the ingredients and the inspiration by which all this creation has taken place? You see, nowadays, we're not very astute in our ability to create things. Actually, most of what you see is simply technology. It's got nothing to do with science. Technology means the art of arranging matter in such a way that it can be utilized for your own sense gratification. That's technology. There's a technique behind it. But science means to actually understand the true nature of things, where they have come from, what is their original intended purpose, and how they should be utilized. That is science. Thus, there are very few scientists in today's world, and a lot of technologists. So, Brahma, he manifested the Vedas from his front face, and they came out as Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Veda. And after these four Vedas were spoken, then there were other corollary or accompanying hymns, which are also considered Vedic hymns. They had also been manifested through Brahma, and they're explained here that they contain all the different sciences, all the different arts and skills, like the military science, the musical art, the medical science, the science of architecture. These are very valid and useful sciences, and they're coming from the Lord. So, there is important, more important, and most important. We understand that the spiritual science, Atma Tattva Gyan, is the most important science, because by this science we can extricate ourselves from this predicament of the material world. We can actually attain the supreme destination. But while we're residing here in this material world, we also need to know how to live our lives as gentlemen and ladies. And for that, we have been given these different sciences. Now, of course, the Vedic wisdom is vast, and no single person can study or know or understand all these Vedic literatures in one lifetime. Therefore, because our time is limited and our intelligence is limited, we are faced with the task of having to choose our battles. Nana shastra vichara naika nipuno sadharma samstapako lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manya sharanya karo. We are very fortunate and blessed that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan painstakingly went through the Vedic literatures, and they extracted all the essential teachings that are relevant, that are important, that are valid for our situation. Because if you would be faced with the fact that you should study Vedas, how many of you studied Sanskrit? Please raise your hand. I don't want to offend anybody. How long was your study of Sanskrit?
10 years.
Okay.
Up to year 10,
okay. But not just exclusive Sanskrit. It was just part of the curriculum. It just happened to come along with the package that you were following in your schooling. So you're very fortunate. But it is stated that if you want to study Sanskrit properly, it takes 12 years to master the grammar. Now that's nothing else, just Sanskrit. You just do 12 years of grammar.
Now,
most of us are a little too old for this kind of pursuit. Would you like to go study Sanskrit for 12 years? Just grammar? And then after that comes a lot of other things. And that's just to understand the language. It's not even understanding what they're writing about. That's just the language part. So we understand that our time, our intelligence, our enthusiasm is limited by our situation. Therefore, we are very fortunate that the Goswamis have painstakingly combed through the Vedic literatures and extracted or extrapolated all these essential verses and teachings that are impertinent, that are indispensable for the self-realization, for the spiritual achievement of humanity. And they have compiled them in their books, like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Goswamis have written hundreds of books, and Srila Prabhupada has given us the essential teachings of the Goswamis. Of course, there's also the Satsandharbas and Briya Bhagavatamrita. and the Deepikas, the different commentaries. There's so many essential books that even when faced with all the works of the Goswamis, you may feel this is a little overwhelming. Huh? It's a little much for our appetite and for our attitude. So Srila Prabhupada, in his Bhaktivedanta purports, he has distilled the quintessence, the summum bonum of all the Acharya's commentaries. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, and then you check back with the original commentators, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., you will see that Srila Prabhupada has taken all the major points from their purports and has put them in his Srimad Bhagavatam. Prayena payasa sabhyam kalavasmin juge jana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya hyupadruta. We're short-lived, we're less intelligent, and overall, we're always slightly disturbed. Have you ever been disturbed? Or is it just me? Huh? It's like now it's slightly cold, so you feel a little uncomfortable. It's a little disturbing, right? And so many other types of disturbances. If you were to make a list of all the things that trouble you, I'm sure you could come up with a few things. And because of that, because of our situation, Srila Prabhupada has given us the concise truth. Because true eloquence is truth spoken concisely in such a way that the audience can not only appreciate it, but they can actually grasp it. They can actually benefit from it. They can actually apply it in their own lives. Many times we hear lofty philosophy, but it doesn't really connect to our situation, to our life. We feel this sounds great, but I don't know how I'm going to live this. I don't know how I'm going to apply this in my life. So what is the essence here in these verses? First of all, if you want to achieve something, you have to be ready to do a little austerity. Without austerity, there are no beneficial results. And if we want to achieve something, we need to know where to look for it and whom to ask for it. So Brahma, he prayed to the Lord, the source of all creation, and he got wonderful revelations. And he was ready to share those revelations with all living entities. In Sri Brahma Sanhita, Brahmaji is conveying all the essential truths. Because the Vedic knowledge is very vast, so Brahma has given us a synopsis in his Brahma Sanhita. And how does he start off? Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadhir Adhir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Of course, that's the first shloka of that one chapter that we happen to have by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. There's a lot more to it. So he is giving us this understanding that Krishna is the supreme and everyone else is subordinate. Everyone else comes from him. Because even if you study Vedas, you might get a little confused sometimes. Oh, who is it now? Is it this one? Is it that one? Is it all of them? Is it none of them? What's going on? Because there's so many different opinions. And anybody who has got a little bit of learning will come up with so many ideas. Tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinna nayasya rishirmatam nabhinnam dharmasya tatva nihitam guhaya mahajana yena gataksapanta. People are very interested in arguing because they think that as a sign of intelligence, they have to disagree with everybody else. Have you ever met somebody like that? Who just as a first opening line would say, I disagree. I don't agree. I disagree with what you say. Why? Just as a matter of principle. So that you will acknowledge me as a very intelligent person, because I have my own opinion. It's like when Srila Prabhupada asked John Lennon and Yoko, who are you following? They said, we're not following anybody. In fact, people are following us. We're the innovators, and they are following us. So, in this world, everybody wants to be known as unique and as a great innovator. And that is the nature also amongst philosophers. That's why they are known as tarkis. A tarki is a person who is simply trying to find fault with others in order to establish his or her own supremacy. But these arguments are inconclusive. Why are they inconclusive? Because they are based on pratishta. What is pratishta? It is the aspiration to be known as a very scholarly, as a very unique, as a very fashionable person. It's based on false ego. And what has no ground, no standing, what is based on something false cannot be something real, cannot be something truthful. Therefore, the tendency to disagree and to find faults and to criticize others is based on something insubstantial. Thus, it is futile. Because the true nature of dharma, dharmasya tattvam, the tattva, the truth of dharma, it is guhaya, it is hidden. Guha means cave, like Maharaj Guha. He lived in a cave in the forest. So guha means cave. What is that hidden place where you hide the secrets? Not under your mattress, not in your safety locker at the bank, not in your computer, because somebody's going to find it eventually. So what is the most secret place that you have? Mind? No. No. Mind, somebody can just say, okay. Where did you bury your gold? Somebody can just do the magic and your mind will be mesmerized and you will reveal it. The heart is also compared to a cave because it is the secret. It is the most secret place that we have. So in whose heart is the secrets stored? Mahajana yena gataksapanta, in the hearts of the Mahajans. The great sages, Swayambhur, Naradak, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Pralada, Janaka, Bhishmo, Balir, Vayasakir, Vayam. These Mahajans' lives and teachings are there in Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus, if we want to know the true nature of Dharma, we have to study Srimad Bhagavatam and apply our intelligence to understand these Vedic truths and to live according to them. So this perfect knowledge contains not only Atma Tattva Gyan, but it also contains valuable information about all aspects of human life. And they are available in the Vedic scriptures. But because our time is short, we have got exactly 19 minutes left on this class, we will not elaborate on Dhanurveda, on Yajurveda, on all the different other sciences and arts like musical science, architectural science, because you could speak upon them for months and years on end without reaching the end of it. But the essence which has been given to us is in the Vedanta Sutra, which starts off with Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire about the real duty of humanity, which is to find out about Atma, about Brahman, and about Parabrahman. So, the natural commentary of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. Because even Vedanta Sutra, for us, is not accessible. How many of you have read Vedanta Sutra? Show of hands. How many have tried?
you hear a few of these aphorisms, and you know, they're just aphorisms, they're just a few words, and you think like, wow, okay, what does this mean? It can be interpreted in so many different ways. Unless we have the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, we cannot understand these scriptures. Therefore, we are very grateful to Srila Prabhupada to sacrifice his time to give us Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada stayed up all night, every night, and translated not less than 6 pages of Srimad Bhagavatam for at least 3 to 4 hours. He would be up in the night. From usually around midnight to 4 o'clock, he would translate to give us these books. And he struggled and persevered to get them published. And when he found out the time was too short, he left India, he left Vrindavan, and he went to the West in order to publish his Bhagavatam. So, when he was walking in New York City on the street, Hayagriva Prabhu saw him, and he came because he had been to India before. So he asked him, "Are you from India?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes." He asked him, "Who are you?" He said, "My name is Howard Wheeler. I'm an English professor." So Prabhupada said, "Can you edit?" And he said, "Yes, because editing is an easy job for an English professor." So Prabhupada said, "Can you help me edit something?" And he said, "Yes." So he took him to his apartment. And Hayagriva Prabhu thought that Prabhupada will give him a pamphlet or an article or maybe an essay or something. And Prabhupada gave him 900-page manuscript, Bhagavad Gita. He said, "Okay, you start with this. Then when you're done, then you open his trunk. Then you can continue with this." So first meeting, he gave him lifetime mission. So like you walk into the door here at the temple and you think, okay, let me see what these people are all up to, what they're all about. And first person you meet, you know, they hand you a broom and they say, "Can you clean, you know, this ground or this temple hall?" And you think like, "Hey, but I'm a guest, you know." "Yeah, yeah, that's what we do with guests. We give them the privilege, the honor, to do devotional service." And it is a fact. It is a fact. Very often we misunderstand. We think that to be a guest means that you are entertained. I had to find that out the hard way. A couple of months ago, I was in Italy with my spiritual master. And I was in the same room doing service for him. And he was not paying any attention to me. So I had not seen him in a while. And my mind got a little disturbed because I felt there should be at least some look or some kind word or some encouragement, some reciprocation. But it did not happen. So I became exceedingly uneasy. My mind became a little perturbed, started churning, and started thinking, what is going on? Did I commit some aparad? After all, I'm doing my service, my duty. So he also has his duty as a guru. His job is to encourage me. So he should reciprocate with me in some way or form. And this was going on for some time till a very deep sense of satisfaction and realization overcame me. I realized that finally I had been accepted as a servant. You do not need to entertain a servant. You do not need to be sociable with a servant. Why? Because a servant is not insecure. A servant knows his position. A servant knows the mind and the heart and the mission of the master. And a servant is fully empowered to carry out that mission. You have servants running estates. You have servants running companies. Rupa and Sanatan, as the ministers, they were running the government. So, if we truly understand the heart and the mission of our spiritual master, we should feel empowered to carry out his desires without having to be acknowledged and being prodded and being commended and being entertained every step of the way. So I learned the hard way that I had just crossed from being a visitor or a spectator to being part of the inner circle. And there is a price that we have to pay for that. So as long as we still expect our superiors, our gurus, to entertain us, to socialize with us, to pamper our false egos, we will not be able to cross from being a spectator to actually being part of the inner circle. So Brahma, he also had to pay the price to become part of the inner circle. And that meant that he became the instrument of the Lord, who was simply interested in manifesting the Lord's desire here in this world. Today is the return rat, where Lord Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra return from Gundicha back to their home at the temple. And it is a beautiful festival, which is celebrated every year. But because people tend to just take the Ratha Yatra day as very important, they do not pay so much attention to these other festivals. But it is a beautiful festival and it is taking place today. So one time I was in Puri with my spiritual master and we were next to Gundicha attending a function in one of the mats. And I was in the capacity of assisting my spiritual master. And after a while of being in that mat, all of a sudden, something very shocking, something very strange happened. My spiritual master went missing. He was gone. He just was nowhere to be found. So it's kind of embarrassing when you're serving somebody, but that person is just gone. He just disappeared. And you don't know where he went. So I kept looking, and there's nobody there. So this is in the middle of summer. It's very hot. So I went outside that temple and went in front of Gundicha, and the car was still parked. So I asked the driver whether he had seen Guru Maharaj. And he said, yeah. He went back to the place where we stay. But he told me to wait here for you. So, spiritual master went and walked in the hot summer heat, but he left the car behind for his servant so he could catch a ride, to catch up with him. Nrideha madhyam sulabam sudurlabam plavam sukalpam guru karnadharam mayanukulena nabasvaterita pumam bhavabdim natareca atmaha. We cannot understand who is guru by our blunt senses, by seeing. We may think, oh, guru has to look like this, guru has to behave like that, and that is guru. Out of our own romantic, idealistic, projective assumption. We cannot understand who is guru except by guru karnadharan, by hearing the teachings, the instructions of guru. Through our ear, we can understand who is guru. And then, if we take shelter at the boat of the instructions of the guru, we can cross over the ocean of nations. Now it is very wonderful that that boat is waiting for us. Whenever we are ready to cross that ocean, that boat is already waiting. Did you ever miss the train? Or the bus? Or the plane? Or the boat? It has happened to most of us. So that feeling is quite a frustrating feeling. I sometimes have these nightmares. I wake up because I have a bad dream. And what's that bad dream usually? I missed the flight, you know? Somehow, there was some mistake. And you get there and they say, sorry. No, it's gone. So we all had that experience. But the beauty of this boat is that it's personalized. It's waiting just for us. At exact that place where we are ready to access the ocean of birth and death, and we have that desire in our heart, yes, let me Let me be inquisitive. Let me be of service. Let me take shelter. Let me actually achieve the objective of the human form of life. That's where that boat is already waiting for us, ready to take us across the ocean. So this is the beauty of this process of Krishna consciousness, which has been made available to us through the Guru Parampara, going back to Lord Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada, who himself went on that journey 50 years ago, crossing the oceans to bring us this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, to make this boat widely available. So if people ask you, what line of business are you in? You can tell them, I'm in the shipping business. Huh? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm in the shipping business. What do you ship? What kind of cargo? What kind of goods do you ship? We you know, you heard of the Arche Noah? You know, we're trying to ship a few people over the ocean of nations and ship them back to Godhead. Huh? That's our intention. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Toronto, Canada, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in front of a supermarket, and there was a lady who was mid-80s, and she was pushing her little, you know, those little push things. What do they call them anyway? Walking frame. Is that the English word? Walking frame. Okay. She was pushing her walking frame. And she had, you know, there are little shelves, so she had some plants there that she just purchased, and she had a little pet puppy dog there. And so I talked to her, and she told me that she had left Germany when the Second World War was just about to break out. She left and she came to Australia on a boat. So I gave her Bhagavad Gita and I showed her Prabhupada's picture and I told her, you know, you've been a teenager when you left Germany, but he left India when he was 7 years old. With 40 rupees in his pocket, just a couple of dollars. To bring this message to all the people of the world. So she was very touched and she gave me all the coins she had. And after talking with me, she told me, son, you've made my day. So, in showing gratitude to our spiritual predecessors, we should all take a little bit of tapasya, which is the wealth of the brahmanas, and make plans. How can I reach people? How can I touch people's lives? How can I give people the opportunity of taking up this process? Just like a person who is in business is always making plans. How can I expand my business? How can I get more customers? How can I move more product? How can I optimize my profits? So since we are in the shipping business, we should make plans. How can we actually achieve our objective? Now, since we're talking about ships, Srila Jiva Goswami has said that the tongue is like a rudder, like you see these big boats in the Melbourne port. You see these huge cargo boats with these big containers. How many containers fit on a boat? A lot. You have an idea? The biggest ships, how many containers they can carry? Anybody? Anyhow, is a lot of containers. There's a lot of cargo there. It's a huge boat. They're massive. The rudder is a very small part of the boat. Depending on how the rudder moves, that boat takes its course. In the same way, our tongue is a very small part of this human body. But depending on how we move our tongue, our life will take a certain direction. So when we learn the art of Shrinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyan Takstohya Badrani Vidunoti Suritsatam, to daily vibrate Srimad Bhagavatam, then our course will be back home, back to Godhead. But if we are interested in Gramya Kata, in village talk, then we will end up in the village, in the marketplace, asking, what is the price of this and what is the price of that? So we are very fortunate that we have this opportunity and we should take it.
Vishwanath Chakravarti Parth, in the purport to the 10-10 shloka of the Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite, he's making a very interesting point, and Prabhupada elaborates on it. Srila Prabhupada says, sometimes you may be in a spiritual organization. I wonder who he's talking about. And you may be in a spiritual movement, but you may still not get it. Have you ever felt like that? You know, like we're in the right place, we're trying to do the right thing, but sometimes, at least for myself, I'm still not getting it. But then Prabhupada says something very comforting. He says, if you're sincere, and you're honestly striving, and diligently working on a daily basis, the Lord within your heart will give you knowledge, this remembrance that is required. So, it is available. And we can take advantage of it by taking advantage of the association of the devotees. Because if we simply answer to God, then we're no better than some of those dictators in the Middle East. They also say, I only answer to God. If we say that I only worry about Guru, then we're not better than these fundamentalist, fanatical Christians. Nowadays, you purchase any decent car, it's got GPS, Global Positioning Satellite System. So, you need 3 satellites to define your location. Not 1, not 2, but 3. In the same way, we have GSS, Guru Sadhu Shastra. You can't say, oh, I'm in touch with Guru. How are you in touch with Guru? Because you see him once a year, and you ask him the same old questions that you asked him last year, and you don't remember his answer. So again, you ask the same thing. That's how you're in touch with Guru. Oh, I'm reading Shastra. Oh yeah, when was the last time that you read the Bhagavatam? No, I read Gita. I mean, almost. I mean, some of it. I mean, what do you know? Yada, yada, hidarmasya. Yeah, right. That one, yeah. I know that one too. From the songs, from the movies. Yeah, that's the one they quote. Because that's as far as the memory goes, right? And sadhu. But sadhu, not just, you know, the Ashirvad Babas, not just the people who you drop a coin and then the hand goes up, you know. It's like the one-arm bandit, you know. You drop the coin and the hand goes up. We could invent, you know, an Ashirvat Baba machine for blessing. I'm not trying to give you any ideas for economic development, but it's already there. It's already happened. You drop the coin and the hand goes up and the smile comes on. So, it's not enough to have a relationship with one of these three. You need to have a clear signal from all the three. From Guru, from Shastra, and from the sadhus. Now you may say there are no sadhus, but that means you're blind, you're ignorant. Look around you. There's so many sadhus who are practicing this process of Krishna consciousness. So, if we want to get some traction, if we want to make spiritual advancement, we should apply ourselves to this easy path of bhakti yoga. But to strictly follow the easy path might be a little difficult. Because it might mean that we desist from going to uni and studying Sanskrit. It might mean that we desist from reading all these other books and all these other commentaries and all these other things because we do not have that time. We do not have that intelligence. We might get confused. It might create an incompatible mixture of rasas. So, to focus on the essence is required. Thus, a devotee is known as saragrahi. A devotee is a person who is always looking for the essence. Just like Krishna is known as Bhava Grahi Janardhan. Krishna is extracting, he's absorbing the essence
the bhav. So we should ask ourselves today, what is my bhav? Am I in Ishwara bhav or am I in service bhav? Ainanda tanuja kinkarang patitam mam vishame bhavam budau kripaya tapapata pankacha sita aduli sadrisham vichintaya. Mahaprabhu prays, O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servitor. King Kara, Kim Karo, Snan Koro, Dan Koro, Koro. Koro means what?
Do.
Yes, action, right? Not maybe, not perhaps, not think about it. No, do. Kim. Kim means what? What should I do? So this should be our only question. Kim Koro. A King Kara, a servant, is a person who asks, what should I do? So once I asked my guru in Mayapur, what should I do to please you? And he said four things. Strict sadhana, exemplary character, be enthusiastic and always strive for unity. If you do these four things, you will please me. So we can see here in Brahmaji's example that because he applied himself with confidence, he became empowered. So in the same way, if we're following Lord Brahmaji's example, the Lord will also be pleased and will empower us to render some humble service for the benefit of all the living entities. And thus, we will evoke the pleasure of our spiritual master. Yasyadeve para bhaktirya tadeve tathagurau tasyaite katita yarta prakashante mahatmana. If you have the pleasure of the spiritual teacher, nothing is unachievable. The zip file will become unzipped in your heart. That's pretty good. It will all become revealed in your heart. It doesn't mean that we do not have to engage in devotional service, but it means that we can actually access these esoteric meanings, these profound meanings of the Vedic scriptures. Hare Krishna. Any questions in this regard? Always be enthusiastic. Other points? Yes, Prabhu.
One of the things that encourage us to develop compassion, or what are the things that fuel that compassion?
Well, passion means suffering, and compassion means to suffer together, because shared misery is only half the misery. Like the passion of Christ is the suffering of Christ. Passion is what creates suffering. Often we don't understand this. In German, passion is Leidenschaft, what creates suffering. So we think, oh, it's good to be passionate. So the question is, what am I passionate about? So to have compassion means we actually feel the pain of others. I once asked one of my godbrothers, who's an Ayurvedic and allopathic doctor in Mumbai, what is the prime quality to become a doctor? And he said, you have to be able to feel the pain of a patient. If you can't feel another person's pain, if it just means nothing to you, you can't be compassionate. So, first is that empathy, that ability to emulate or to feel the other person's predicament. Just like Prabhupada, he felt our suffering. Even though he was fine, because he felt the suffering of the jivas, he left his nice position and he took upon himself the great austerity of going to the West. One time a temple president wrote to Srila Prabhupada and he was very disturbed about one devotee in his temple who was giving him a hard time. So Prabhupada's answer is quite exemplary and it relates to your question. Srila Prabhupada wrote the temple president and he said that you should tolerate this devotee just like I'm tolerating you. So in other words, you have somebody and they tell you, you know, the house burned down, you know, the dog died, the kids took off, and, you know, so many things happened. I just lost my job. And you go like, yeah, you know, I got some homework to do, and, you know, I'm kind of hungry. Can we go take breakfast now? And the person feels like, you know, I'm not feeling the love here. I'm wasting my time. Because that person is total disconnect. It's just, there's no, it doesn't commute. It means, for us as preachers, that we put ourselves in the shoes of that person, that we actually can relate to that person. And sometimes people are not looking for solutions. They just want somebody they can air, they can vent, they have some grievance. And just being able to talk about it already makes them feel better, 50%. So, Srila Prabhupada was available and accessible. Every day his door was open for 2 hours in the afternoons for public darshan. Anybody could come and sit down and talk to the man. So we should ask ourselves, how much are we available and accessible? Even though we may be face to face with people, are we available? Are we accessible? Or are we absent-minded? Because sometimes we're just somewhere else. We're just not really connecting with what's going on right in front of us. So the ability to feel compassion is quite a unique gift. And it comes from, first of all, philosophically understanding the suffering of the living entity. Second of all, understanding that our sampradaya is a sampradaya of compassion. And this is what we're meant to do. This is the job. This is not one of the jobs. This is the job. And third of all, taking that little trouble and austerity of just keeping your mouth shut and smiling and listening, at least for the time being, because it's required. Krishna could have just, you know, done so many things to Brahma, but he was very patient. And we can see from the Bhagavatam what is the proper way of interaction. Just like we see all these questions and answers and all these different interactions. So it's very exemplary. It's very difficult for me personally to speak about compassion, because when you are jaded or contaminated by this expediency of our modernistic, capitalistic mindset, it's very difficult to feel real compassion. Like most of the Western civilizations were built, you know, capitalism or all this colonialism, immigration. You know the history. You know how things are built and on what mentality and what mindset they're built. So sometimes, unfortunately, we tend to reflect the national guna and karma that we grew up in. And sometimes even movements take on that character. So we have to be careful that we don't become cold-hearted, calculative, expedient, pseudo-spiritualists. I know it's not your case. You're all very kind-hearted and soft. But sometimes these tendencies creep in, because we tend to just lose sight of the bigger picture. And we see things in a very mechanistic kind of a way. So for me, what gives me confidence? I have a few people who care for me. And it gives me the faith that it's possible. It is possible. I know a few people who are doing it. So I should also try. We're all sitting here today because somebody is dropping nectar on our heads. I can see there's little dents. I can see there's little impressions on your heads because somebody is dropping nectar on you. So in the same way, we should also become fountains of nectar and spread a little bit of that realization and goodness and those things that we have appreciated and realized in Krishna consciousness. So for me, that's as far as compassion goes. When I read Prabhupada's example, when I see the example of the acharyas, then I feel attracted to it. It's still hard to be fully selfless and dedicated to the benefit of others. But when you meet such a person, it's quite shocking. It's quite captivating. It's quite attractive. And you feel like you're ready. You want to give your life to that person because they are so compassionate that it becomes hard to conceive it with a mundane logic. I don't know whether that helps, but that's as far as the bird can fly before breakfast. Any other points?
The official, latest official statistic shows that 1 in 5 Australians are getting mental illness.
Yes.
And the number of people suffering from mental illness is increasing day by day. So, if you ask them to chant, they can't because of the medication they are on, which affects their concentration and motivation.
So, what's the solution?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes. First of all, we have to understand, in this world, everyone's crazy, to some extent or the other. So, there are different degrees and different variations of this insanity. It comes in different flavors, you know? Like when you go to the mall and you see that the t-shirt is there in 18 different colors and you become slightly confused. Of course, for guys, it's not a problem because they just either wear white or black. But you think, okay, maybe I should buy one of each. So this variety of insanity, it comes in different flavors. But we understand, according to the mixture of the modes of material nature, it takes different manifestations, but everybody's suffering in the same way. Whether you be a college professor of psychology, or you be a serial killer, or you be a shoplifter, or you be a president, or you be a simple, you know, worker in a factory. As long as we are suffering under the bodily concept of life, and we think that this body and this mind is me, we're insane. Like, you know you're not your hat, right? You know that, isn't it? Otherwise you wouldn't be wearing it. So...
But I need it to protect my from cold.
Yes, that's fine. That is permissible. But you understand you're not your hat. So, most people have not gotten to this very simple fact. They still identify with the hat, with the shirt, with the coat, with the car, with the house, with the country, with the job, with the family. They identify with all these things that are upadis, their designations, they're external. They got nothing to do with the Atma, the soul. That's why it's so important that we give people Bhagavad Gita. Because if you just understand one shloka, the hinosminyata dehe, the soul is wandering through all these different bodies, but it is distinctly different from the body. If you just understand that, that's the first step towards sanity. And if you don't understand that, then all your degrees amount to nothing. They're just different flavors of insanity, different flavors of foolishness.
Sorry to interrupt. I asked that question to a couple of psychiatrists, experts in treating people with mental illness. I asked them, what do you think about the cause of schizophrenia, so it's a type of illness. And they said that God was creating human beings, some went faulty. They're all faulty items, he said.
They're all faulty items. Yeah, so we give the blame to God. Give the dog a bad name and hang it. It's the easiest, oldest trick in the book. If I don't like somebody, I just point the blame at them, and in this way, he's the fall guy. He has to suffer. For what? For my mistakes. Because I wanted to play God. And I wanted to administer these little pills and tell people in which box and what kind of disease they have. We create the problem, and now we're trying to push it off, and we make somebody else responsible for it. A Vaishnav's attitude is exactly the opposite. What is a Vaishnav's attitude? I live to be rectified. I have many things that I need to learn. But a materialist, his mentality is, It's God's fault. It's the world's fault. It's the society's fault. It's my family's fault. It's my upbringing's fault. It's the job's fault. It's the weather's fault. It's everybody else's fault except me. Unless something goes well, then I take the credit for it. Huh? I did it my way. Huh? I done the job. But any problem, anything goes wrong, blame it on the other guys. So this is not very acceptable. Not even very intelligent. So we should desist from this type of logic because it doesn't go very far. Last point. Yes, Prabhu.
Is Krishna eternally patient with us? Is he willing to wait forever?
Yes. Because you see, a parent will never give up a child. Even though a child may go missing, this, that, child may misbehave, parent will never give up on the child. That's just the nature. Huh? Even if it creates agony and suffering on the part of the parent, but they will never give up. So yes, he is eternally patient. But does that mean that we should eternally make him wait? No. We should try to finish up our business and come to sanity. So we should not test Krishna's patience because it's not very nice to do that. So I should not test your patience any longer, and you are released to take prasadam. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanandi.